Welcome inside the Fantasy Sports Network studios. This is another edition of FST, and we are live. Welcome inside. This is Chris Meany here, Toronto. We have Pete Jensen in just a moment. We're going to talk, of course, this is FanRag Sports Week, and we're going to talk to Al Melchior. He contributed a piece on their website, top 25 baseball players in the game, 25 years or younger, and you can guess who is at number one. But we'll really dig deep into some names that I thought were interesting. We saw a little bit of Gary Sanchez last season. What do we expect from him in a full season with the Yankees this year as a sophomore? And plus, we will talk some PGA DFS with the Tour Junkies. Pat Perry is going to join me, and this is just an interesting slate because nobody's ever played here. We've got the elevation, so this is a very, very interesting WGC, and it's a big purse as well. So if you're playing one and dones, this is the one you want to get as well as we're now full swing into the season. So let's bring in Pete Jensen from NHL.com. He joins me right now. There are 12 games on the ice. We're going to talk a little DFS. Pete, welcome. But first, off the top here, let's talk about Kevin Shattenkirk, who was dealt to the Washington Capitals last night. Brad Malone, Zachary Sanford headed the other way. Also a 2017 first-round pick, a second-round pick in 2019. The Blues are going to retain 39% of Shattenkirk's salary. We all know he's an unrestricted free agent. Your thoughts on the trade?
Yeah, it's a short-term move, obviously, for the Capitals, who are looking to win the Stanley Cup. That's their goal every year, and they have maybe their best chance yet to do so. You wouldn't think they would have needed another strong defenseman. They already had Carlson, Niskanen, and Orlov, who are fantasy-relevant guys, but obviously Shattenkirk is a guy who, by per 60 minutes in terms of power play production over the past 4 years, nobody's been better. In general, power play points past 4 years, second to Erik Karlsson in terms of his total. So he's been outstanding, and he joins an even better power play unit. He reconnects with TJ Oshie, his former teammate, and obviously gets to dish it off to Alex Ovechkin and be involved with Nicklas Backstrom as well, and maybe work with John Carlson on the power play. We'll see if they go four forwards or two defensemen, but it's going to be very interesting. And I like, for the Blues standpoint, I know they had to part ways with Shattenkirk in the midst of their potential playoff run, but I like what this means for Colton Parayko moving forward as a keeper league asset in fantasy formats. I think he's the real deal young kid and has some serious point potential, especially next season when he has a full season to work with.
Yeah, good call on Parayko for sure. This guy the rest of the way is probably going to be pretty good. Also in leagues with hits and blocks, he can contribute there. Power play time, as you mentioned. I just want to stick with Shattenkirk quickly for a second. I mean, Matt Niskanen, it looks like he could return tonight for the Capitals dealing with a knee injury. Does this hurt? I mean, you mentioned Carlson, but does it hurt Niskanen maybe more so than Carlson? And do you think that Washington, with Pittsburgh and all the injuries they've had on their back end and rumors that Shattenkirk wants to play in New York, do you think Washington was like, no, listen, we're getting Shattenkirk before you guys do?
I'm sure they didn't want to see the Rangers get him because there's a good chance they're either going to run into the Rangers or the Penguins or maybe even both. So, yeah, definitely, I think that played into it. And in terms of the fantasy value of Carlson and Niskanen, it's funny, actually. Niskanen has outperformed John Carlson this year. He's been a big disappointment considering where he was drafted, top 10 among defensemen. I think it hurts Niskanen for sure. I think it will hurt Carlson for sure as well if he is demoted from the first power play unit with Backstrom, Ovechkin, Marcus Johansson, and TJ Oshie. But if he is on that first power play unit as part of the two defense front, the two quarterbacks, I think it could actually be better for him because he hasn't, it takes a little bit of the load off his back in terms of moving the puck and generating possession, which Shattenkirk does so well.
It looks like Shattenkirk will play tonight, his first game with the Capitals against the New York Rangers in New York, so kind of interesting there. Okay, let's move over to tonight's slate. There's 12 games on the ice, and Pete, sometimes we just really pick on Buffalo, we pick on Arizona, all these teams so much, but I just want to start with Boston and Arizona. I mean, there's a trio in Boston that have just been lights out. I know Pastrnak is not playing with Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron lately. He's been in and out of that line, but I mean, those three guys are just rolling right now, and how do you feel about them from a DFS standpoint, even though probably their ownership's going to be pretty high tonight?
Yeah, I think you got to try to get two Bruins on your roster, whether it's spending up for a guy like Pastrnak or moderate price for a David Krejci, who's been better than a point per game under Bruce Cassidy. Of course, the Bruins are 6-1-0 in seven games under their new coach, and they've scored four or more goals in five of those games. So the offense has been rolling. Seven players are at a point per game or better since the coaching change. Marchand, Bergeron, Krejci, Krug, Pastrnak, Vetrano, and Backes. And I think when you look at Vetrano on the second power play unit, Backes in that spot that Pastrnak was in for much of the season with Marchand and Patrice Bergeron, that's really where the value is with the Bruins. And look for, you know, the Coyotes have been playing better the past month or so, but still, I like the Bruins to feast on the Coyotes and score four or more goals in this game. I think it's a pretty safe bet.
Yeah, Ryan Spooner also is another guy who's got some terrific value. You mentioned Bergeron, 15 points in his last 10. Also Marchand, 15 points in his last 10 games too. So both of those guys really rolling right now. Okay, let's move over and let's talk Nashville and Buffalo again. I always talk about picking on a team like the Sabres. Robin Leonard looks like he's not going to make the start tonight. There's a couple guys in Nashville, Pete, that they're just really hard to ignore right now. Philip Forsberg, 8 goals in his last 4. He had 2 in his first 27 games. He's now top 25 in scoring after being top 80 a week ago. And then Roman Josi, I mean, 6 goals and 14 points in 11 games since returning from an injury. 3 straight multi-point games in a row. What do you make of this Nashville team? Do you think they'll be able to feast on Buffalo like you think Boston will be able to do so with Arizona?
Yeah, Josi has been as good as any skater even in the past month or so since returning from injury. The Sabres right now are starting to fall out of it a little bit. They have Linus Ullmark in net, so that's good news for the Predators, who have, you know, they're scoring 3.5 goals per game this month. They're 7-4-1. You have to like what the defensemen are doing, and actually the impact has been positive on even a Ryan Ellis, who's been extremely productive with the man advantage, and he's benefiting from the returns of PK Subban and Roman Josi and just their general puck moving impact on the offense. And then, yeah, Philip Forsberg, his price is getting up there in most formats, but I think you definitely can't ignore him. One guy that is in a goal scoring drought but has been dishing off the puck very well lately is James Neal, and he's much more affordable than Forsberg in most formats, so that may be a guy kind of against the grain who has multi-point potential in DraftKings or whatever format you're playing in, and the price is a little bit more affordable to fit into your grand scheme of things.
Pete, we only got 30 seconds. I'm just going to throw one guy at you. I know this is a busy week for you with NHL trade deadline happening on Wednesday and perhaps maybe no more deals happening, but what do you think about Matthew Perreault? You know, Winnipeg coming off their bye, you know, tonight, and he was slated on a line with the greats and Patrick Laine and Mark Scheifele, and I can call both of them that. I mean, Perreault, 6 points over a 4-game point streak. What do you think about him not only tonight, but maybe a sneaky ad in formats with hits and shots on goal? Do you think that he could be worthy of a pickup?
Yeah, he's been fantasy relevant in the past during short spurts, and as long as he's in that top six with either Laine or Scheifele or even Little or Wheeler, I think there's decent short-term potential the rest of the way, and that's what you have to look at. Sometimes it's not just the name value. It's guys that could produce close to a point per game over a given stretch, and I think Perreault has proven in the past that he's able to do that. So, yeah, he's a sneaky little ad for sure. Look out, though. I know the Jets have played more games than more than half of the league, so the games played in year-long formats not exactly on their side.
I believe I'm playing you in the Keeper League this week, and I have Perreault going tonight, so hopefully he does me wonders against you. Pete, we always appreciate your time, man. I know this is a really, really busy week, so thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Oh, no problem. Good to be here, and thanks for having me.
Anytime. Enjoy trade deadline tomorrow. Again, all these moves really have already happened. We were waiting for Shattenkirk. We talked to Scott Cullen yesterday, and it's already happened. So maybe Duchesne, maybe Landeskog. Other than that, I don't think too many big names are going to be on the move. A big name, Al Melchior. He's part of Fantasy Sports Radio Network. He's also part of FanRag Sports, and this is FanRag Sports Week. So we'll talk about a lot of just studs 25 or younger. Stick around. More baseball talk here on FST. This is Fan Rag Sports Week. It's all fantasy baseball, and let's bring in Al Melchior from, of course, Fan Rag Sports. You can catch him on Fantasy Sports Radio Network 4 days a week, Al. 3 p.m. Eastern. We got you on Monday, Thursday, Friday, and then Sunday at noon Eastern. For those who don't know anything about Fantasy Sports Radio Network, you can listen live or on demand. Check out the app. Welcome to Fantasy Sports Today. Al, how's it going?
Oh, great, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. We really wanted to dig deep into an article that you contributed. Top 25 players, 25 or younger, of course. Number one on that list is Mike Trout. We don't have to spend too much time on Mike Trout. The only question I'll ask you about him and fantasy baseball is, do you want that first overall pick in leagues? Do you want to have Mike Trout? And do you think having that first pick kind of hurts you?
I think it does a little bit. Look, I'm not going to argue if I have the number one pick. Obviously, I'm taking Mike Trout. But my preferred pick would actually be fifth. I'd be good with fourth or fifth, because then you've got some better options in the even rounds. And I wouldn't mind walking away with Paul Goldschmidt or Jose Altuve, Mookie Betts. So any one of those, first four or five picks, I'm pretty happy with who I've got there, even if it's not Mike Trout.
So there was a consensus ranking, and I know you were a part of ranking these guys. And so, again, it's the top 25 players, 25 or younger. Trout was number one. Let's go with Gary Sanchez, who was number 14. 20 homers, Al, in just a small sample size, 53 games. Steamer has him at 27 home runs and just under 600 plate appearances. Do you think that's fair? Like, what can we really expect from this guy? I know he plays in New York. I know he has some pop. It's a great division to play in as well. But from the catcher position, is this somebody that you want to draft?
He is definitely, and I don't usually go for somebody who's played roughly a third of a season. But I think that the power is very much legitimate. I think a projection of 27 home runs is fair, maybe even just slightly conservative. And I can understand, again, going conservative on somebody with such a limited track record. But you have to remember that the Yankees affiliates, AA, Trenton, AAA, Scranton, those are tough parks to hit home runs in. So, we saw it with Greg Bird when he came up. He had power that looked out of line with his minor league numbers. But I think with Bird, as with Aaron Judge, with Sanchez, I think that the power is going to be there, especially hitting in Yankee Stadium, having those AL East ballparks to go to very frequently on the schedule. Sanchez, actually, I probably won't get him because I view him as neck and neck with Jonathan Lucroy, and he's been going ahead of Lucroy. But I do rank him second as well. I just don't know if I'm going to be able to pull the trigger quite early enough to actually get Sanchez.
The power is for real, and the power with Kyle Schwarber is also for real. I mean, even though he had a zero average last season, but of course he only had five plate appearances, a significant injury, but we saw him in the postseason and just he was lights out, Al. I mean, he was fantastic. He had great bats against Andrew Miller. And you know what? Word out of Chicago is he's going to be the leadoff guy for the Cubs this season. What's your expectations with him? And do you have any concern that maybe late into ball games, if the Cubs are in close games and he's playing left field, he could be taken out for defensive purposes?
I do worry a little bit. I think the fact that Schwarber is going to lead off, it sort of neutralizes that at least somewhat for me, because he's going to get those extra plate appearances. But the Cubs, they have such a deep roster, so many versatile players, that I think Schwarber could be lifted defensively early. I think that he may not play as regularly as we would like. Not that I think it's going to be enough of a playing time downgrade to worry about, but I think a lot of those players in the Cubs lineup, they're going to get rested, and I would count Schwarber among them. But I think Schwarber, he will catch, as the third catcher on the team, I think he'll catch enough that at some point he will get that catcher eligibility, and for me, that's a very big deal. So I think between hitting leadoff and eventually getting that catcher eligibility, Schwarber is somebody I would very much like to have as, eventually a catcher, but in the meantime is a third outfielder.
Yeah, I know, Al, you and I participated in a Fantasy Pros draft last week, and it's a two-catcher league, and I was able to get Schwarber, so I was pretty happy that just to see the catcher by his name right now, it obviously is satisfying for me in a two-catcher league. Okay, let's switch over. We've got two Jays pitchers. If you look at their numbers, they're very, very similar. Aaron Sanchez and Mark Stroman. I think Sanchez has better stuff, but both guys strike out 7K per 9 last year. They both had solid ground ball rates, at least 54%, 60 for Stroman. And last year in an auction, I got Sanchez for $1 when Stroman went for 24, and I almost feel like it's just flipped this year. In the rankings on FanRag Sports, $23 or 23 was the ranking for Stroman, and Sanchez 21. Who do you like more?
I do like Stroman just a little bit more, but you know, you make the comparison. I think it's a good one. Again, both good ground ball pitchers, both up to this point have just really been merely average strikeout pitchers. In fact, in the case of Sanchez, I would argue maybe slightly below average, but Stroman, I think, is a slightly better ground ball pitcher. In fact, he had the highest rate in the majors last year. I also think he's got more strikeout upside, because we did see at times last year where Stroman was able to get a lot of strikeouts. So I think he's got that edge over Aaron Sanchez as well. I'll give Stroman a little bit of an edge in the overall ranking over Aaron Sanchez. And Sanchez has had some control problems in the past as well. He was able to overcome those last year. But I think in all aspects of the game, I do give Stroman a little bit of the plus mark.
Much like, I guess, Sanchez, you know, he was shut down at one point. They were just working on his innings a little bit, 192 innings still. Michael Fulmer was also shut down a little bit at some points. He missed some starts, but a solid campaign from him. Number 24 in the rankings. How do you feel about him? Is he a target for you this season?
He's not. I mean, it's sort of like what I was saying about Gary Sanchez, to the degree that I wouldn't mind having Fulmer on my team, but I just think that the hype coming off of a good rookie season, a rookie of the year season in the American League, I think it's elevating his ADP more than I'm willing to gamble on him. You know, we talk about these ratios in terms of ground ball ratios, strikeouts, walks. Fulmer is around average on each of those, maybe a little bit above average, but where he's going in drafts, just not far after pitchers like Julio Teheran, Gerrit Cole, I don't think that Fulmer has really earned that yet. So I'm sure he's going to be off the board in pretty much all of my leagues before I'm ready to take that chance on him.
I think I feel the exact same way about you, too. It's going a little bit too early for me. One guy that you did write about, though, Al, was Carlos Correa, and I think he disappointed a lot of people last season just because he went early in drafts, I mean, as early as 5 off the board, and now middle of the second round. Do you think that's a fair spot for him, and what do you think that we can really – I mean, this kid is lights out, Al. I mean, what do you think is a fair projection for him this season?
Yeah, well, I think that second-round value is exactly on the nose for Correa. I was one of those people going after Correa in the first round. I think I took him as early as 6th in a draft last year. But partly it was the expectations for Correa coming off of that great half-rookie season, and part of it was that the shortstop landscape looked totally different a year ago. Now we have all these up-and-coming shortstops who were really terrific last year, and Correa's kind of fallen back to the pack a little bit. But I think that makes him a value, because in terms of a projection that you're asking for, I think that he could hit 30 homers. I think a 25 to 30 homer projection is pretty safe for him. I think a batting average probably right around 280, some double digit steals in the, you know, maybe 10 to 15 range. I think batting cleanup, that might hurt the steals a little bit, but he'll help there nonetheless. And right in the meat of that Astros order, I expect him to produce a lot of runs. So I think he very well could be the top producing shortstop. I mean, I have him ranked behind Manny Machado, who's shortstop eligible, but I think Correa could be just right there at the top.
Gotta love that Astros lineup this year, Al. I really appreciate your time, man. Thank you so much for joining us. Keep up the good work at FanRag Sports and, of course, Fantasy Sports Radio Network, man. Happy to have you. Thanks a lot.
Love being on, Chris, so thanks again for having me.
All right, take care. Al Melchior right there. If you're not following, you're missing out. Also, just some news, Adrian Peterson declined his option, so he's a free agent. We'll start talking about that soon. Golf is on the way up. Stick around. You're watching Fantasy Sports Today live here on Fantasy Sports Network. I'm Chris Meany. Thanks for taking the time to hang out. Let's switch gears. PGA, DFS, PGA Tour Junkies. Let's bring in Pat Perry. Pat, the defending champ here is Adam Scott, but there's a problem. He's never played this course before. WGC Mexico Championship. I love that the purse is high. It's great for one-and-done players. I just want to know right off the top here, what kind of key stats are you looking at? We have 49 of the top 50 golfers. Jason Day is not playing. Rory is back. Just what's the key stats here? I mean, people can bomb off the course. Everybody's going to be, or off the tee, everyone's going to be able to do that. Are you looking at stats like maybe just approaches to the green and short game?
Yeah, exactly. Actually, strokes gained approach has been a staple stat category for us almost every week, and it is again today or this week. Also, strokes gained putting, we're looking at scramblers. One of the things we were able to do, there's no course history here, so we don't have that to look at this week. Obviously, we have recent form, which is a big factor, but on our podcast, we had John Appian, who's a player on the PGA Tour, Latino Tour, and he has played the course and gave some good insight. And, you know, this course is 7,300 feet above sea level. So even though it's 7,300 yards, it's not going to play that long. It's going to probably play about, you know, more like a 6,700 yard course. Like, I think you're going to see these guys scale back a little bit, not hit a bunch of drives off the tee. We are looking at total driving, which is going to bring in accuracy and driving distance, but not necessarily bombing this week. And last but not least, one of my favorites, always greens and regulation.
Okay, let's bring up some of the most expensive players on DraftKings. Of course, Dustin Johnson is top of this board. He's won a WGC three times, and he's also the number one golfer in the world. So that's very interesting. This is his first time with that that tag. But you see Adam Scott down there at number 8, Justin Thomas at number 10, Rory at number 3. How do you feel about him?
Well, first off, Dustin to me is, you know, it's hard to, you know, fade a guy like that. But I don't like the price being $1,000 over the next best guy, which is Jordan. I love Jordan this week. I think, again, he's been in contention in almost every tournament. So I think Jordan really is one of my favorite plays above 10K. Rory, I'm fading this week. He's coming off of an injury and, you know, he hasn't played in a while. And I'm taking a wait and see approach for him. I would much rather go down and pay for a guy like Stenson, who can, you know, he's just going to hit that three wood that he just stripes down the middle all day long. I think Stenson's a great play, obviously good recent form. So those, you know, Spieth and Stenson are my favorite up there. Also like Rose, you threw him up on the board as far as the top 10 there. And, you know, just going to fade Rory and just see what happens there.
I love Stenson as well. I feel like he's going to be my one and done because of his strong iron play. Is that how you feel about him? Do you think he's a solid one and done, or is there somebody else that you're looking at?
I do think he's a one and done. The only thing that would maybe concern me a little bit is I might want to save him later on in the year for maybe a major or something like that. But I think he's a great play as a one and done. Just a fantastic player in good recent form.
There's a couple players I want to throw out at you. Alex Noren is just moving up the world golf rankings just consistently now, and his price at $7,200, I feel like that's not fair.
Yeah, no, he is one of the mispriced players this week. Again, coming over from the European Tour, has won recently. So again, you're looking at recent form for him. I think Noren is one of those guys that's just flying under the radar. You're going to see him more and more playing overseas over here with the majors. I think he's going to contend in majors. And so at $7,200, he is hard to avoid in GPP or cash. Love Noren this week.
47% of the field, 36 golfers in that 7K range. Is there anybody else that you feel is mispriced?
Bill Haas definitely at 7,000. He is totally mispriced this week. He checks every single box for us on the stat categories, has good recent form. This is a course that sets up well for him. If I can get him at 7,000, I'll take that all day long. So Bill Haas is an excellent play in that 7,000. There are a lot of guys really down here that I think are kind of mispriced a little bit. DraftKings was good on their pricing last week. I can't say so much this week. There's a lot of value down there.
Pat, we only have about 30 seconds. Is there another player? I mean, maybe it's a scrub, maybe it's somebody else that you feel strongly about.
I think Russell Knox is a good play this week.
After
he let everybody down. He is our trash to treasure play this week, though. We really like him. $6,900 is a good price for him. Again, this is a course that sets up well. I think, you know, Knox for me is going to go into a lot of lineups, and I think he's going to be lower owned than he should be based off of, you know, us DFS players. You know, we remember that week before, but we forget how good these guys are. So I think Knox is going to be a good play.
Just like playing the game of golf, you have to just be able to forget, you know, what had happened lately. It's all about what have you done for me lately in the DFS community. I think that's a solid play as well. Pat, we always appreciate your time. Sorry we're short for time, but thank you for jumping on, and good luck this weekend on the links.
All right. Thank you, Chris.
All right. Pat Perry right there. Tour Junkies, give them a follow on Twitter. They're fantastic. Their podcast is awesome. Just the fact that they talk to pro golfers is right up my alley. I'm Chris Meaney. Good luck on the ice tonight. See you tomorrow.